Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Guarding Truth by Kelly Underwood. The truth might destroy them both. The one thing that former armor ranger turned elite bodyguard Juliet Montgomery regrets is never telling fellow soldier Caleb Stiles her true feelings. But how could she? They were co-workers, and then the guy went and saved her life, and that turned out to be the one thing that cost them their relationship. So Juliet has moved on, trying to forget Caleb and her feelings. Caleb hasn't forgotten her either, but he has no idea she now lives in Savannah, Georgia, especially since his life is full as guardian of his niece Ivy after her parents were killed. And then he discovers that his brilliant niece's computer skills have attracted a notorious hacker group. More, when Ivy tracks the hackers, she endangers Caleb's cybersecurity company. Enter his need for the elite guardians. The last, very last person Juliet thought she'd see again is Caleb Stiles, let alone be assigned to protect him. And now, suddenly, the very last thing she needs is to let her heart take over. She must protect them both, which means ignoring, or trying to ignore, the attraction between them. Caleb never understood why Juliet walked away from him, but he can't deny that his feelings for her never died. Except that maybe she doesn't share those feelings, because her only goal seems to be protecting Ivy. And it's probably for the best. After all, they need all their wits about them to find the hackers and unravel their plans. And then they discover the hackers' true intent, and it becomes a race against time. But is it too late to protect their hearts from the truth?
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Kelly Underwood, whose favorite things are reading, writing, and drinking coffee. So I'm so delighted we're going to get to talk about writing and all things romantic suspense. So welcome to my show, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So I have to ask, I'm glad you picked this question. It's one of my favorites to ask, is why romantic suspense? Why did you start writing in this genre? I mean, I think it's the best genre, of course, but why?
Yes.
Why did you decide to write romantic suspense?
Well, I always joke, and I blame my parents, because when I was 5 years old, I lived in a funeral home. So, like, I'm always joking that that's the genesis of it, you know. But honestly, if I'm reading a book, it's got to grab me from page one. I just got into suspense more so than the romance, but I feel like you need the romance to kind of have realistic characters and have, you know, characters you care about. And just the blending of that romance with the suspense, I have always loved it. I started off reading Cherry Blackstock, Lynette Eason, and a lot of other authors, and I read, like, every book I could once I found an author, you know? And so I just kind of grew up reading romantic suspense, and I've always been drawn more to the suspense than the romance. But I do like the romance portion, just to be able to have those realistic characters and have the emotional layers as well as the action. Because you can get action fatigue if you just have too much nonstop action. So I feel like romantic suspense just kind of blends the best of both worlds.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. And, you know, I have some of my author friends, you know, they write straight romance, and I love reading their work because it's great. But sometimes I'm like, okay, so when is somebody going to shoot at them? Or, or where's the danger here? I'm like, wait a minute, not reading romantic suspense is okay that there's not danger. And, but I love the way that the situations that they're in or the mystery they're trying to solve kind of can bring them closer together, or even just throw them together where maybe they wouldn't have even met, otherwise. So yeah, I do love that lovely blend of that, yeah. But it can be hard to write it. So what's the hardest part of writing this genre?
I think adding in those emotional layers. You know, you can have a suspenseful scene and that's great, but you also need some sort of romantic tensions as well. And so knowing when to add in certain beats and knowing how to kind of layer those emotions. So you just want characters that people care about. Like the best compliment you can get as an author is like, I feel like I know these characters, like they're real and I care what happens. And you don't want someone to get to the end of a book and be like, eh. Like you want that deep connection. And so I think that's tricky, and that's just working on your craft and getting better over time at digging deeper in the emotions, and not just the first emotion that pops up, but like what's the second or third emotion or the unexpected emotion that's going to grab a reader and be like, ah, I hadn't felt that feeling. So just I think the emotional layers in keeping and also keeping the balance of suspense and romance, but I just think those emotional layers are key.
Yeah, no, I would agree, and I also would say that, as we, give our characters a rich backstory, we can use some of those, that emotional story to kind of, layer their reactions, and they may be a little more unexpected, and to have them say things and do things that maybe the reader's like, oh, yeah, maybe I can relate to that in some way, or
Exactly.
Maybe see themselves. And then since we write, you didn't mention this, Kelly, but since we write Christian romantic suspense, we have that third layer of faith in there, which can add even more emotion, kind of a component to it. So, which I
Oh
love
yeah,
as
it's a
well.
third layer. Gotta layer in
Yes.
your spiritual as well.
Yeah, so it like you said about layer, but it can be. That's what I find the hardest is to make sure that usually my first, as I'm writing my first draft, I realize I probably lean more heavily on the suspense, and then the romance, and then the faith is kind of in my mind. I know they're acting this way because of their faith or lack of faith or wherever they are on their spiritual journey. But I need to when I'm editing, I tend to have to layer that in a little bit more. But yeah, it's all a work in progress on that. So what about the inspiration for your plots? This is also one of my favorite questions because I know I get this a lot from readers. How do where do you come up with these ideas? So I'm always like to hear that as well. So you go first. Where do you get the inspiration for your plots?
I kind of get it from various places, but a lot of times I'll just be watching a TV show or a movie, or I'll see an article. I'll be like, well, that's an interesting concept. And then I kind of take it from there. And I have actually, I had one story that I got from another book. It was another romantic suspense, Christian romantic suspense book. But I tried to guess the ending, and I was completely wrong. It's not where the author was going. But then I was like, but that's such a great story I just came up with. So I went back and wrote it, because it was like completely nowhere near what the author had intended for the ending to be. But I kind of spun it off from there. I'm like, well, what if this character did this instead of this? And so, I just kind of ask myself a bunch of questions, and the ideas start to form. And sometimes do like a TV show or something like that, and I'll be like, ooh, that's a great concept. And then I just start asking myself, where can I go with this? What happens if A, B, and C happen? And so I think just all around me.
One of my ideas, Kelly, is to have like a novella collection, and all the romantic suspense authors in the collection will start with the same idea. Right? The same like one line idea, and then because we'd all write them so different. I just haven't done it yet, but it's in the back of my mind. I'm like, when I ever get my ducks in a row and put it out, I don't know what the idea would be, but it just, to me, that would just be so fascinating because we would all write such different stories. I mean, we wouldn't talk, and we would just say, okay, here's the one sentence idea for the book or the novella, or the shorts or whatever, and go for it. And I think we would just have such interesting concepts. Anyway, there's
I
my
love that
idea.
idea. I
So
think that'd
you're
be
in. This is what I'm
fantastic.
hearing. If I ever get it
Yes, oh,
together, I'm going to email
absolutely.
you and say, "Hey, Kelly,
Yeah,
let's
because
do
that'd
this."
be so fun.
Well, it would be, and I think that's one thing that whenever I talk to like new authors who are writing their first book, and I love them. They're great because we all were that author one day. But sometimes they get really protective of their ideas, and I really just tell them. I said, you don't have to worry about it because you could tell me your idea, and it might be the greatest idea ever, but I'm not going to write your book because I'm going to write something totally different. So you know, we can all share the same idea and just go different directions. So, okay, well, one day, listeners, we will have that project out there because I really am going to do it one day.
It would be so interesting to see on the back end. Yeah,
exactly. So when do you find time to write? Because this is, again, a great question. You don't. Okay, I love you, Kelly.
It's had its ups and downs. It really has as far as time. Because I work full-time, too. So I work full-time and doing other things. But what I've started to do is just set myself goals, like really small goals. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get up a little bit earlier in the morning, and I'm going to write 500 words. If I write more, that's great, you know, but I'm going to aim for 500 words a day because then at least I feel like I'm taking steps to putting words on the page. And then once I get the page, I can edit, you know. So just setting smaller goals for me seems to be really working well. I also do a lot of writing on the weekends, and I just try and block off, like, I like to write for longer periods of time. I'm not one to just be like, I'm going to write for like 5 minutes here and there. Like, I want to have like a solid hour or 2 hours. So I do a lot of writing on the weekends, too.
Yeah, I know. I recently went back to a part-time job that I have set hours for during the week, and I have to get up early and go in and come in. And I'm like, this is great. I'm really happy about it. I'm enjoying it. But I'm like, oh, my writing time is really, you know, I have to change it and find it. And it's just it's hard. It can be hard. But, you know, when we're dedicated, like you said, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm in the editing stage of one of my novels as we record this. And so I'm like, okay, at least I'll do a chapter a day. Because some rewrite, some do it. And I'm like, okay, because like you said, with the 500 words, it's a goal. And then I try to do more on the weekends well. But, yeah, it can be so challenging. Do you have a favorite go-to when you need a pick-me-up to keep writing?
So I change locations. I work from home mostly. I think I'm in the office one day a week, but mostly I'm home. So when I'm, like, working from home and then I write from home, I'm like, get out of my house. So there's coffee shops, like, up the street. There's a really nice one, and I'll just go sit there. And just being in a different atmosphere seems to, like, get me to work a little bit faster. So, of course, there's coffee. but just getting out of the house, or sometimes I'll just move across the house. I have like a nice patio. I'll just go sit on the patio just to have a different change of perspective. And that seems to work really well.
Yeah. I often wonder how difficult it was before laptops, right?
Oh,
I mean, we had the clunky computer. I mean, we couldn't move either. We had to leave and we had to take our notebooks and handwrite it, or we're lugging a giant typewriter around. I mean, I know they made more portable ones, but, I often think about that because I wouldn't have been able to write. My handwriting is terrible, so that would not have gone well for me.
The typing would have been awful, too, because you can't read backspace.
I know. Yeah, spell check and all that. These laptops are wonderful. I'm glad they're so portable. So we are almost at a time for our conversation right now, but I would love to hear, what are some of the questions you get when you say you write romantic suspense? Let's end with that one.
It just probably depends on who's asking the questions, because, you know, if it's a man, they're like, romance, really? I'm like, no, I blow things up. It's okay. You'll like it. But a lot of the same questions that you've asked, like, where do you get your ideas from? Or, you know, and a lot of, like, where can I buy your book? And, you know, but I love it because being an author is something people want to do. They're like, I've got a great story idea, but then that's where it ends. So people are naturally curious when you're like, I actually wrote from start to finish a book, it's published. They're just fascinated by that. And so, like, I just love talking about, like, the ins and outs of writing and the process and publishing and all that, because people really want to know, because not everybody has the time or, you know, is able to follow through with the kind of the dream, like I'm living the dream. So I
Right.
get to talk a lot about and share a lot about that because people are just like, wow, you actually wrote a book, because not everybody does, or, you know, not everybody has that opportunity. So it just becomes like a fascinating conversation for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I just and I agree, and I like to do in-person events. I do a lot of craft shows in the fall because I have a couple of Christmas novellas, and it's just fun to meet people. And so many times they're like surprised. They're like, "Oh, wait a minute, you're the author?" And they're just like, "Wow," you
Yeah.
know. And it's a question, and it just makes you feel like you're almost like a mini celebrity. And I'm not that big a name, but it's still kind of thrilling. I'm like, and then if they buy a book, I'm like, "Well, you want me to sign it?" And they're like, "You would?" I'm like, "Yes, my favorite part of being an author is, you know, signing books to them." So yeah, just that joy. So readers out there, if you meet us, we are love to talk about our writing, and we are thrilled when you say you bought one of our books, because we, you know, it just makes us feel good that someone else is reading our works besides our moms, our best friends, you know,
Exactly.
which we
No,
love too. We love that too. But yeah, all right. Well, thank you so much for being on my show. This has been a delight to talk with you, Kelly.
oh, it's been so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Now, an excerpt from Guarding Truth by Kelly Underwood. Nobody move. This is a good old-fashioned bank robbery. Juliet Montgomery froze in line for the bank teller. Four masked men had burst through the front doors of First United Bank of Savannah, guns blazing. Screams echoed through the lobby, and her hand went instinctively to where her gun usually rested, but she'd left her sidearm at home. It was just one quick trip to the bank before breakfast, and now men, dressed like ninjas, held innocent people hostage. Noelle Burton, Juliet's colleague and friend, rolled her eyes. "I never should have agreed to breakfast with you," Noelle said through gritted teeth. "Danger always seems to follow you. Just one errand?" "Everyone quiet and on the floor. Now." Juliet complied, moving at a snail's pace so she could survey the lobby. Nine patrons, three bank employees, four gunmen, one security guard that a gunman had dragged to the back of the bank, and two professional bodyguards with the Elite Guardians Agency. Juliet shimmied 6 inches to the left so she could hide behind the table with the deposit slips. Noelle dropped and crept to the right. Juliet shot off a text to Matthew Williams, friend and officer with the Savannah Police Department. Then she hit the record button. A shot, followed by more screams, bounced off the tile floor and reverberated through the lobby that looked more like an exhibit hall at the Louvre than a bank in downtown Savannah. The paintings on the wall were probably worth more than the historic house that her grandmother had left her. She lived in the basement apartment and had leased the top two floors to the Elite Guardians. "Toss your cell phones to the center of the lobby." Drat. She left the video recorder on and slid her phone toward the pile of others while one twitchy bad guy went from person to person to ensure compliance. Juliet committed to memory the man's cold gray eyes and height. 5'10"-ish. Lanky. One of the robbers, the shortest of the men, took a can of spray paint to the fancy artwork. Blood red paint dripped down the side of one of the paintings as the man etched one word, Rushmore. The spray painter joined the other masked man in the back room, presumably to force a bank employee to open the safe. That left Twitchy and one other beefy guy who looked like he lived in a gym to guard the lobby. If she was going to make a move, it needed to be now. Two against one? She'd faced bigger odds than that. Juliet wasn't a wait and see what happens kind of woman. She acted first, then thought about the ramifications later. No way she would let innocent people be hurt on her watch. She was a bodyguard, and she mentally took on 12 new clients. She glanced at Noelle, sending her a silent message of her intent to intervene. Noelle squinted and shook her head. She mouthed, "Are you crazy?" Juliet shrugged. No way would she cower on the ground while these men took what they wanted and threatened innocent civilians. Now, what could she use as a weapon? Juliet searched the room and spotted an award proudly displayed on the corner of a desk a few feet behind her. The crystal trophy had "Best Customer Service" engraved across the front, but what caught Juliet's eye was the sharp point at the top of the keepsake. Heavy and sharp, just what she needed for the perfect improvised weapon. She inched her way to the desk and waited until the bulkier of the two men headed toward the back of the bank. Do you really think you'll get away with this? Juliet stood, faced the bad guy. The man swung his gun in her direction. Down! Now! Noelle stood. Listen, just let the people go. You don't want to hurt anyone. The second the gunman took his eye off Juliet, she grabbed the award and rushed the man. He was a hair too slow, and Juliet clocked him in the head with the corner of the crystal before he had a chance to get a shot off. Noelle kicked the gun from his hand. A few bank customers cheered from their positions on the floor, but this wasn't over. One down, three to go. Sirens wailed in the distance. Juliet went to grab Twitchy's gun. The man clutched the gun but held his sleeve over his forehead to staunch the blood from where the award had clipped him. But a voice stopped her in her tracks. They called the cops? The three men rushed from the back of the bank, guns blazing. Juliet and Noelle held their hands up. Back on the ground, one of the men growled, pointing a gun in Noelle's face. Juliet and Noelle hit the floor and lay on their stomachs, hands over their heads. The man Juliet assumed to be the ringleader of the group jumped up on a desk. She noted his blue eyes and pale skin peeking through the eye holes of his mask. Listen up. The man angled himself right in front of a security camera. He sent a shot into the ornate chandelier in the middle of the room, sending shards of crystal scattering. Shrieks tore through the room, and patrons covered themselves the best they could. We are Rushmore. The man's deep, gravelly voice commanded the room amidst a few muffled sobs. The CEO who runs this bank is Edward McMillan. He stole money from the people, and we're here to claim what belongs to the hard-working citizens. The courts might not have convicted him, but we will. It would have been hard to have missed the news of Edward McMillan's acquittal for fraud and other unethical practices. The story had been blasted by all the 24-hour news outlets for days, but that didn't demand this demonstration of vigilante justice. The bank robber in charge stuck his hand in a backpack, pulled out a wad of cash, and threw it in the air. $100 bills scattered everywhere. From her position on the floor, Juliet watched the four men waltz out the front door, strolling like they were on vacation and not fleeing a bank robbery. Money rained down around them like confetti. Juliet and Noelle were on their feet the second the door banged shut behind the thieves. What was that?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.